Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. 962 days, 12 hours, 54 minutes, 10 seconds. Until George W. Bush leaves office voluntarily, that's assuming that there's no impeachment process between now and then. Our quote for the day, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. Thomas Jefferson. Later on in the program, in the second hour of our program, Robert Kennedy Jr. is going to be joining us for about a half hour to discuss the article that he has on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine out today about the theft of the 2004 election from John Kerry. And he has nailed this thing down in a way that I read it last night, word for word, all the way through, and it is absolutely shocking. This is the political bombshell, perhaps, of the last 50 years. I mean, this is huge. And so you got to check it out and be sure and stick around for that. Right now, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest serving independent member of the House of Representatives and now running for the Senate as an independent from the great state of Vermont. Our website, TomHartman.com, our telephone number, 866-440-8466, if you'd like to call in. And Bernie's website, and please check it out, is Bernie.org. Bernie Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom, and I'm calling you from WDEV Radio in Waterbury, Vermont, one of the stations here in Vermont that carries our show, and it's one of the great stations in the state of Vermont.
Oh, it is, and please give my very best to Ken and everybody else there.
I just threw him out of his office. I will relate that to him.
That's great. Ken Squire is, he's an icon in radio.
Old-fashioned local radio at its best. They do a really great job.
Yeah, it really is, and he's also a wonderful human being. Well, that's great. Bernie, what's on your plate for the day?
Well, a couple of things. We just did a press conference here in Vermont a few hours ago on the issue of sustainable energy and the absolute need for the Republican leadership and the president to try to do their best to really understand the crisis that we're facing in terms of global warming and environmental degradation, and to understand that if we move forward on energy conservation and sustainable energy, you know what? We're going to create millions and millions of good-paying jobs in America, and that this is a win-win situation. We're fighting for the life of the planet. We're fighting for our economy, and it is beyond the wildest of imaginations to think that we continue to give corporate welfare to oil companies while we ignore all the potential that exists for sustainable energy.
Yeah, this could make the dot-com boom look like a hit.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you just think about what kind of jobs can be created when we retrofit old buildings, when we move to automobiles that are not getting less mileage per gallon today than we got 20 years ago, when we begin to explore what the potential of solar and wind and hydrogen, biomass, coal with carbon sequestration, all the other technologies that are out there. We can make a transportation system, we can make an economy clean, and in the process we save the planet and we create millions of jobs.
Do you think that Al Gore and his movie, have you had an opportunity to see it?
I haven't. It's coming to Burlington very soon, and I certainly look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I saw the live show. He came to Portland here about a year ago and did a live, his live gig, which is what the movie is based on. And it was in the Civic Center. It could hold like 2,000 people. And we got there an hour early, and the room filled up with 2,000 people, and there were still 1,000 people outside. They were banging on the doors.
Tom, I'll tell you something. We did, as Vermont's congressman, I send out mailings to people, and occasionally, we will send out questionnaires, what do you think about Social Security or health care, the economy, whatever it may be. And we listed a bunch of issues. And you know what issue came back most at the very top of the list in terms of people's concerns? It was precisely the issue of sustainable energy.
Yeah.
And we have legislation, Jay Inslee of the state of Washington, in fact, has introduced some very good legislation based on what is called an Apollo project. Are you familiar with the Apollo project?
I am. Yeah, it's marvelous.
It's bringing together environmental groups, trade unions, all kinds of organizations who would say, look, this is a win-win-win situation, save the environment, create good-paying jobs, let's go forward. you know, the problem that we have, obviously, in the Congress right now is you have folks like Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, who is the head. This is the chairman of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works. And he believes, and I quote, that the issue of global warming, quote, is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people. End of quote. Yeah. Now, that should reassure us all that you have the chairman of the Environmental Committee in the Senate who thinks that global warming is a hoax. Well, that may tell us, you know, why we are where we are today. And, by the way, why people should understand that when you change leadership and party control in the House or the Senate, you're getting rid of all of these guys in leadership positions. It matters who is the chairman of the Environmental Committee.
Well, and it's not just Inhofe. I mean, here's 10 seconds of Rush Limbaugh on this.
I think the modern environmental movement is simply the latest refuge for communists and socialists who are opposed to capitalism.
Wow. It's clearly a progressive, thoughtful voice addressing the major environmental and economic crises facing the United States of America. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Yeah. And meanwhile, while we have Inhofe giving forth his, you know, brilliant thoughts, what we are seeing is that countries like Denmark, Germany, and Japan have made significant progress beyond the United States of America in gaining economically from renewable energy technologies. You recall that in the United States we developed solar photovoltaic panels, and now non-American companies are producing about 90% of them. Japanese are moving forward in solar technology also, and you know, and Europe is doing.
Pardon my interrupting, Bernie. Did I tell you the story of my trip to Germany and the solar thing?
Tell me it again.
It's quick and it's worth. I used to live in Germany and I go back there at least once a year and have for 25 years. And I was there in November and taking the train. It's a 5-hour train ride east to west to this little town Stadtsteinach where I used to live. And looking north at the south side of houses, I saw for the first time. I hadn't seen a year before. About every third house had their roof covered with solar panels. I get to Stadtsteinach, and my friend Samuel Mueller, who I'm staying with, and he's got this huge solar array on his house. And I'm like, Samuel, what's the deal here? Well, what they did was the government passed a law that says that the bank has to, they're guaranteed by the government, of course, but they have to offer a mortgage, a 10-year mortgage on installation of solar power. And if you put solar panels on your house, the power company has to buy the electricity back at 8 times market rate. Now, 8 times market rate is about what it would cost if the power company was going to build a new nuclear reactor, a new coal-fired reactor. In other words, this is the investment part of building a new plant. And so they're investing in power infrastructure. And at the end of 10 years, the power company then has to buy it back at one time, in other words, at parity. But for the 10, and so Samuel is making about $100 a month in profit on the electricity that he's selling to the power company after he has paid the mortgage. So at the end of 10 years, he's going to completely own this solar system. It's enough to power his house and provide power to the community. Right. And it was all done by this kind of public private partnership. In other words, no government dollars are being involved in this thing. And there's just this explosion of solar power all across Germany. And they don't have to build more power plants because every home has become a power plant.
I mean, that's the kind of thinking and innovation that we are sorely lacking in many respects in our country. I mean, what is very frustrating about this issue, both from an environmental perspective and an economic perspective, is it's all sitting there. I mean, this is not, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, people were dreaming, right? Coming up with great ideas. Well, we have the technology. The technology can be greatly improved, no question. But it's there right now, ready to go, and we are not doing it. The idea, I mean, just one example of 100. The idea that we are driving vehicles in the United States of America today that get worse mileage per gallon than was the case 20 years ago, how can anybody justify that?
Yeah, and yet GM is selling Opels in Europe that get 50, 60 miles to the gallon.
Exactly, and exactly. So it's sitting there waiting to happen, not to mention the hybrid technology, not to mention hydrogen cars fueled by hydrogen fuel cells. We have a car that's going to be running around Vermont with, which is not a hydrogen fuel cell car, but it will be a Toyota Prius without a gas tank and with compressed hydrogen going in. But there's all kinds of technologies out there that we can make major breakthroughs on.
Yeah, this is such an opportunity. It's such a and it just it boggles my mind that these guys want to stop it.
Right, and then you have geniuses like Mr. Inhofe making his profound statements. It on and on it goes. And you know, and the president is not much better. The administration has been one of the most recalcitrant organizations, institutions in the world in terms of appreciating and understanding what climate change is about.
Yeah, and Cheney and his energy policy.
Right.
And his energy meetings, he goes to the Supreme Court to keep the members of his energy meeting secret because they're organizing a giveaway to the oil company. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders this entire hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, and Bernie loves to take your calls. Give us a call, 1-866-440-8466. Any topic you'd like to talk about, speak with Congressman Bernie Sanders. His website, bernie.org. Be sure to check it out. We're at tomhartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. Once again, our phone number, toll-free all across the United States, 866-440-8466. Works in Canada, too. 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
You can't. You can't do wrong and get by for very long. Do wrong and all your troubles multiply. Oh, you may not face him here, but you'll sure face the man on high. You can't do wrong.
Now, somebody needs to tell that to George W. Welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us for this hour. And our telephone number, 866-440-THOM, 440-8466. And Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie. I got a call from the DCC this morning wanting money, and I ended up telling them any money I had I was given to Bernie Sanders. Why did I say that? And I need to ask you this, because I don't know. Because even if you're for it, you still get my money. But I'm afraid of what's happening with the Democratic Party. I'm so against everything Republicans stand for, except this one area with illegal immigration. I'm so against the way the Democratic Party is pandering to that group and allowing big business to continue to exploit workers for these real low wages, for these terrible jobs, that if they had to pay, you know, $18 an hour to get Americans to work for, it might raise the price of a chicken 10 cents, but it'd be worth it.
Yeah. Well, two things. Thank you for your support. There are a number of good and progressive Democrats running for office, and I hope they get your support as well. In terms of the immigration thing, you raise a very important issue. And, you know, one of the lines, and immigration is a complicated issue and many aspects of it. But certainly one of the lines that's out there is, you know, the real problem is there are just so many jobs that Americans just won't do. Well, I think in some cases that's probably right. But I think in a lot of cases that is not right. And that's what Glenn is talking about. And I think if people were paid a decent wage and a decent benefits, they'd be delighted to do the work. And I'll tell you something. This is a very important point. When people hear about illegal immigration, I think they automatically think that what we're looking at is Mexicans who are coming over the border to work in agriculture and to do, you know, 12 hours a day of backbreaking work, picking lettuce and so forth and so on. Well, that is certainly part of it. That's a very important part of it. But there's another part of it. Tom, I don't know if you are aware that as part of the bill passed in the Senate, there's a significant expansion of the H-1B program.
Yeah. Yeah, which is white-collar workers.
Which is well-paid, professional white-collar workers, which is scientists, which is engineers, which are computer programmers. And among other things, there's another provision to bring more nurses into this country.
Right, so, rather than expanding our nursing schools.
Exactly. I mean, tell me why it is that Americans are incapable of producing the kinds of nurses that we need. I just don't know why that is the case. Why are we not capable of producing the kinds of scientists and engineers and computer programmers that we need? Why do we have to bring people from other countries into those very good paying jobs? And I think this puts to the lie, I mean, just a lot of what is being said about the future of the American economy. And I think what we're looking at is an economy in which the new jobs that are being created for American workers are so often low-wage jobs with minimal benefits, Many of our good-paying jobs are going abroad, whether it's blue-collar or white-collar, and now we're bringing in people from Europe, Russia, other countries to fill a lot of good-paying white-collar jobs that certainly should be done by Americans. But I think one of the aspects of this immigration thing, and there are many more aspects of it, is the pressure to lower wages in America, which is certainly what the big business community that is supporting this type of thing supports.
That's really the bottom line. Marvin in Gerald, Texas?
Gerald, Texas.
You got it. Marvin, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I just same subject. I have had a thought, about several thoughts about the immigration. We see a lot more of it down here than I think a lot of people do. But on the guest worker, which I'm liable to figure we're liable to get stuck with, I think the Americans won't do the job is a lie, because I think Americans won't do the job for what some people want to pay, but I think if you pay them right, they'll do it.
Marvin, do you see in Texas, and you're right, certainly the situation is very different in Texas and the Southwest than it is in the Northeast. Do you see a lot of pressure on wages coming from illegal immigration?
Oh, yes. It's not even, you see a lot of the immigrants working. I don't know who's illegal and who's legal. I really don't care. I don't have a problem with illegals per se, except for the way that they're handled. As long as they're kept illegal, they can drive wages down, which is, I think is the whole thing.
And you're seeing that in Texas?
Yes. I think that's probably nationwide.
Yep.
But what I was going to suggest is, if we're going to have a guest worker program, why not, Go on, act like we believe this about doing jobs Americans won't do, and just to have it where, yes, we have guest workers, but they have to be paid like 3%, 5% more than the prevailing wage to do any job. You know, if they're going to be doing jobs that Americans won't do, they ought to be getting paid a little more.
Well,
and then tax them enough where they're not actually making that, tax them and pay that tax into the system, and let them draw Medicare, so the hospitals and the local government won't be stuck paying for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're medical.
Interesting concept. We'll get Bernie's response on that right after the break. We've got to take a break here, though. It's 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the radio support group of, by, and for We the People, Bernie.org, Bernie Sanders' website, 866-440-8466, our phone number. We'll be right back.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, no, don't let anything take you down, my friends. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. 34 minutes past the hour, our brunch with Bernie hour. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie.org, his website. The congressman from Vermont running for the United States Senate at the moment as an independent from Vermont. And your calls, let's see here. Becky in Orlando, Florida. You are live with Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Bernie. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Becky.
My son lives in Texas, and he has been to numerous pipelines trying to get a job. And it has happened to him more than once, to where when he has been applying for a job, there has been Mexicans also there. They'll hire them on the spot and tell him that, well, thank you very much for your application. We'll get back with you. And one of the machine operators told him one day, pulled him off to the side and told him one day that whatever particular job, whatever pipeline it was, that they just didn't hire the legals, because that way they can get by with paying them a lot cheaper wages than they can if they hire a citizen.
Well, this is a huge issue. I mean, what we know in America is that for tens of millions of American workers, real wages are going down. And I think that has mostly to do with our disastrous trade policies, which is sending good-paying jobs to China and to other low-wage countries. But to the degree that employers can exploit illegal immigration and pay people substantially lower wages than what American workers would receive, that also has the result of driving wages down. I met with some trade unionists from the building trades unions a couple of months ago, and they were talking about how in many construction sites all over America, employers are doing exactly what Becky mentioned, and that is they're hiring undocumented workers, and they can get them at a lot lower wages than they can American workers, because no matter how low the wages will be in the United States, they're going to be a lot higher than they are in Mexico, and that is just a downward pressure on wages in decent jobs in America, and it is a very, very serious problem.
Also listening in Sacramento, California, Ron, calling from Sacramento, also listening on KSAC. Ron, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi. This is about Iran. I just wanted to mention, considering that we're now the U.S. is an evolving totalitarian police state under Bush, considering we have Luciferian dead-enders running our foreign policy, calling ultimately for national repentance regarding Iran. My question is, with regard to Red China, our policy is containment, and considering that they're wetting their pants about this phony threat from Iran, obviously we do not need to get in another so-called bloodbath. They've got mass murder and war crimes up to their ears and regarding Iraq.
You got a question, Ron?
So the question is, shouldn't our policy be containment? There's at least 10 years away from developing a so-called bomb.
Let me just say this. I think given what has happened in Iraq and given President Bush's foreign policy in general, there is a lot of concern about their approach toward Iran. And I think clearly we need an international solution to the problem. It is a serious problem. I have not a lot of faith and very deep concerns about the Iranian government. But war is not the answer. I think, the caller is right in saying that most knowledgeable observers think that it is going to be a number of years before Iran develops a nuclear weapon, if they do. It is a serious issue, and we've got to deal with it, but we can deal with it without going to war. I think the caller, what Ron mentioned, our policy toward China is containment. That's really not quite right. That's not accurate. Our policy toward China is to invest tens and tens of billions of dollars into that country by the largest corporations in the United States of America. Our policy is to throw American workers out on the street and move to China to give them all kinds of new technology. So I wouldn't call it containment. I would be calling it a massive effort to help China build and grow in all respects at the expense of workers in the United States.
David in Grandy, Massachusetts. Hey, David.
Yes, hello. Hi. Boy, it's good to talk to you. And Congressman Sanders, I wish you good luck in your campaign.
Thank you, David.
I hear a lot of talk about how Democrats have a real good shot at taking back at least one House of Congress. And I hope that's true. I mean, I think if the 2004 election were being rerun today, that Bush would probably get buried. But I got to tell you, I have a bad feeling about this election coming up. And not only because the Republicans control, Diebold and the Supreme Court and a lot of election boards, but also because I'm just afraid there are a lot of Democratic voters who might think that their Republican senator or congressman just isn't quite bad enough to replace.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered what your thoughts on that were.
Well, David, you raise an interesting point. I mean, let me respond in a couple of ways. Number one, the polls now look good for Democrats, but because of gerrymandering and the fact there are just not all that many House seats in contention that are really winnable, it is going to be very, very close. So people should not say, oh, gee, Bush is way down on the polls, Democrats look better, and all these generic polls, no problem, Democrats are going to. Not the case at all. If the Democrats do, in fact, end up controlling the House, it'll probably be by a very, very few seats. So the point is, nobody should be complacent. People should be working as hard as they can. And even if people have, as I'm sure many listeners do, and as I do, serious concerns about the Democrats, there is no doubt that their agenda is far, far, far more progressive than the Republicans, and that the task of the moment is to end Republican rule in the House and the Senate. Now, David asked another question that some people may say, well, gee, I have a Republican member of Congress. He or she is, not all that bad, is not the most right-wing in the world and all that stuff. This is what I want to say, and it becomes a little bit dicey. But what many people don't understand is that the leadership in the House or the leadership in the Senate has enormous power to control the agenda and, in fact, appoints every single committee chairperson. We mentioned a little bit earlier about the gentleman from Oklahoma, who is the Mr. Inhofe, who is the chairman of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works. If the Democrats control the Senate, he goes. He's gone, and his anti-environmental approach is gone. And you'll have a pro, probably a pro-environmental guy running that, committee. So it matters very much who controls the House and the Senate. The most important vote that any member of the House or Senate cast is the first vote regarding who controls the body. So to answer David's question is, when you're voting for your member of the House or the Senate, you're not just voting for that person. You are voting for which party will control either body. And that's a very important vote. And right now, it seems to me to be pretty clear that we have right-wing extremists controlling the House, right-wing extremists controlling the Senate, and we've got to replace those leaders, and we have to support Democrats now to take control of both of those bodies.
Okay. Will in Seattle, Washington. Will, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Just had a some comment on what Bernie was saying a little bit earlier about the H-1B, the white-collar worker. The point I wanted to make was that we're in competition with other countries. I've been in programming for over 35 years, and one of the things that I learned is that the U.S. corporations want to export programming over to countries like India, which make a tremendous investment in education, or the government makes a tremendous investment in education, to make that a part of their gross national product. So, you know, I can understand what the Senate and the House is up against when you talk about a simple thing like, you know, how many people can come into the United States and those types of things, yet you go beyond that and you start seeing the other things that are affecting, you know, the U.S. jobs. But I'd like to know if there are things that can be done about the educational process.
Right, right. Now, Will, you hit it right on the head. I mean, here's the dilemma that we have. The dilemma that we have is that, in fact, in some instances, companies are having a hard time attracting workers that they need as engineers. We are doing a terrible job in educating engineers. We are doing a very bad job in educating scientists in this country, and that speaks, as Will points out, to our educational system. But it's hard for me to believe that we cannot and should not put a lot greater emphasis in making sure that we are producing engineers and computer programs and scientists. We can do those things. The easy way is simply say, oh, gee, we're too dumb a nation. We can't do that. Let's bring people in from around the rest of the world to do these good-paying jobs. So it is, you know, Will is right that we need fundamental changes from first grade on up to make sure that we can fill the scientific and high-level jobs that are being created in America.
Okay. Mark in Houston, Texas. Mark, we have just a little less than a minute left.
Sure. Hypothetical question for the congressman. When he's elected to the Senate as an independent, would he consider switching to Democratic Party if that tosses the majority back to Dems?
No, I will do what I did in the House, Mark, and that is I will work with the Democrats. I certainly will be voting with the Democratic leadership, no question about that. But I have always been an independent as a member of Congress from Vermont, and I will stay in that capacity.
So but if you were the decisive person, that would have the effect, just like when Jim Jeffords went from being a Republican to being an independent, that flipped the control of the Senate to the Democrats.
Well, I would be voting for the Democrat.
Right. So that's effect
pure, pure and simple. No debate about that.
Yeah, the effect of your being there would be that it would help the Democrats get control of the Senate.
Absolutely.
45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Bernie Sanders is with us on the line. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie.org, his website. Our number, 866-440-8466. You can drop by TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. We'll be back with more of Congressman Bernie Sanders, Bernie.org, right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's head on down the road to somewhere. I gotta go, and you don't know how it feels. You don't.
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. The place where smart people get their news. It's the Tom Hartman Program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, running for the United States Senate right now. He's currently a member of the House of Representatives. In fact, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives in that body's history. His website, bernie.org. And David in Bainbridge Island, you're live and on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Hi. This morning on the radio, I heard that Senator Frist, leader of the Senate, said his first number one priority is gay marriage. I just think it's game we're going to have the same thing we did in 2004 where the gay marriage issue cost us the election. And I think, I don't know whether the Democrats and liberals can de-emphasize this gay issue, but it seems to be that's what the main thing is that Republicans are voting for, against the gays, and they link the Democrats with the gays. I'm not a homophobic, please. Don't misunderstand, but this is what he said. His primary priority is gay marriage.
Well, you're right, David, and his second primary goal is to repeal the estate tax so that we can give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the richest 2%, and most of it, or at least half of those benefits, go to the richest 0.1%. But David is absolutely right. What the Republican leadership, both in the White House and in the Senate and the House, have such a disastrous record on almost everything that you can think of, whether it's the economy or the disintegration of our healthcare system or the disastrous war in Iraq or our national debt going up and up or the environment, you name the issue. So what their job will be, clearly, as they come toward an election, is to say, we don't want the American people really thinking about those issues. Let's deflect attention away from that. Let's talk about other gays that take on over the world and school boards and everything else. Meanwhile, historically, issues like marriage have always been dealt with at the state level. And my view is, let's deal with it at the state level. And I think we even have Vice President Cheney's daughter concurring in that. But these guys are trying to deflect attention away from the real issues to play their homophobic card. I frankly don't think it's going to work this time.
Dara in Felton, Delaware on the line. Hey, Dara.
Hi. It's great to talk to both of you. Love your show, Tom.
Thank you.
My husband was out of work for over a year, and he has 2 master's degrees in computer and computer-related fields, and he's an over 20-year retiree from the Air Force. I've been hearing about all this H-1B stuff, and we have people out of work here.
Right.
What do we need to do to stop this? I mean, right here in Delaware, we have really 2 of the worst offenders, as far as the Senate goes, for supporting this kind of crap.
So what you're saying is that in Delaware, we have plenty of high-tech workers who are ready to go to work, but that companies are preferring to hire H-1B people?
Pretty much so, yeah.
Because they're cheaper.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a very, very serious problem. I mean, we've got a number of problems. That should not be allowed to happen. Clearly and absolutely, if there are Americans trained and available and capable to do the job, those jobs should go to American citizens. If there are some circumstances in some parts of the country where we don't have the scientific capability or the kinds of people we need, I can understand that H-1B program. But then we should make that short-term and address that through fundamental changes in our educational system. But I feel that what Dara is saying, it in fact does go on in many parts of the country.
Yeah. Laura in Tempe, Arizona. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Oh, is that me?
That's you.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I was just kind of echoing what your last caller said, because when we moved to Arizona 13 years ago, I won't name the company, but it is just downsized and downsized and downsized, and I know that there are a lot of engineers just, you know, wandering around looking for jobs. And I'm not sure why they wouldn't just lower wages if they needed to. Why do we need to import people?
I had a cab driver in San Francisco 2 months ago who was a computer engineer.
See?
Yeah.
So, Laura, what you were finding in Arizona is that they were importing professional people and not hiring local Americans.
Well, they actually laid them off. You know, they would lay them off.
They laid them off, and then they brought
project or whatever. You know, just the downsizing thing that was taking place before they really started importing a lot of other workers. You know, or offshoring. You know, a lot of their work.
Well, they shouldn't be allowed to go on. I mean, there's no question that if there are Americans who are well trained and capable of doing the work, they should be doing the work, and you don't throw American workers out on the street and bring people from abroad to do that work. That is plain wrong, and the H-1B program should not be allowed to do that, period.
We have just about a minute left. Bob in Shreveport, Louisiana. Bob?
Yeah, hi, Bernie.
Hi, Bob.
I'm driving a truck through Shreveport. I'm a retired airline pilot, and my pension has gone the way of most people in the airline industry. So I had to go back to work at 64 just to try to make ends meet. Here's my question and my problem. I see a lot of Democrats. I am a staunch Democrat, by the way. I worked like hell for Kerry, a precinct captain, and I would never vote for a Republican. I'd vote for Bozo the Clown first. But anyone who supports any sort of an amnesty program or a guest worker program, I won't pull that lever or punch that card or...
Bob, we've got to wrap it up, but we got your point. And Bernie, you want to make a closing statement here? We got about 30 seconds.
Well, you know, Bob, I mean, the bottom line here is that immigration should not be a mechanism to be used by big business to lower wages in the United States of America, period.
Amen. Amen. Well said. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Bernie.org, his website. Bernie, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Bob. Thank you.
As always.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. It's 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Up next, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on how the election in 2004 was stolen by the Republicans.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, broadcasting live on radio stations from California and, California, Washington, Oregon, all up and down the West Coast, all the way out to all up and down the East Coast, and many places in between. Also live on Sirius Satellite Radio, streaming around the planet on AirAmericaRadio.com, WhiteRoseSociety.org, RadioPower.org, and, of course, on cable TV systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. Welcome back. Robert Kennedy Jr. is with us. He's the author of a brilliant new piece of investigative reporting on Rolling Stone magazine this month, on the cover of Rolling Stone. Robert Kennedy, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
Great to have you with us. Give us the snapshot of what your article is about.
Well, after investigating the election, the 2004 election, particularly in Ohio, which was a critical battleground state, we found that there were over 350,000 principally Democratic voters who either were not allowed to vote because of corruption or illicit machinations by Republican Party officials, or whose votes were not counted. In addition, incidentally, President Bush won the state allegedly by only 118,000 votes. So those 350,000 votes alone would have been enough to swing the presidency to John Kerry. Second of all, in 12 rural counties, there was outright voter theft. There was old-fashioned ballot box stuffing and machine manipulation that shifted 80,000 votes that would have gone, that were intended by the voters to go to John Kerry instead to President Bush. That's 160,000 votes that would have more than made up the differential. In addition to that, there are six other counties where similar voting fraud took place. That accounts probably for another 30,000 votes or a 60,000 vote differential. If the votes had been counted in Ohio, President Kerry or John Kerry would have the presidency today. One of the anomalies that I talk about in the article are the election night polls, the exit polls. Mm-hmm. Exit polling is, Tom, is an exact science today. In Europe, for example, in Germany, exit polls for two generations have not been off by more than 0.1%.
Yeah, in fact, let me just give you a quick story. I lived in Germany for a while and over an election year, and everybody votes on paper. It takes up to 2 days to count them. But by the time, but within an hour of the time that the ballots close, that the polls close, everybody in the country knows who won, even before the votes have actually been counted, because of the exit polls.
That's
and,
right.
And it works just fine.
And exit polls have been used to overturn elections recently in the Ukraine and in the nation of Georgia. They are, as I say, they're an exact science. The exit polls during the 2004 election were the most extensive and most expensive ever made. They were they were commissioned by all the television networks and major news agencies, who commissioned Edison Matofsky, who are the number one pollers. Matofsky invented the exit poll, and the exit polls showed Kerry winning the national vote decisively, but also winning in virtually all of the battleground states, in 10 of the 11 battleground states. And yet when the official tallies came in, and this was at midnight, when the official tallies came in by the morning, those votes had shifted, the margins had shifted instead to George Bush. In some cases, in some of those states, by up to 9 percentage points. In Ohio, there was a 6-point differential between the exit polls and the final tallies. And statisticians who looked at that say that's a statistical impossibility. The chances of that happening in three of those states, I think, are 1 in 60 million. It can't happen. And yet it happened. Those kind of shifts happened in 9 of the 11 critical battleground states. Those kind of shifts are a strong indication of voter fraud. And indeed, when we went and looked at what had happened in the state, there is no legitimate dispute that high-level Republican Party officials orchestrated a deliberate, concerted effort to steal the election. Now, and there is a strong evidence, really overwhelming evidence, that they succeeded in doing so. The really, momentous part of this story is the unwillingness of the national press to cover this issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would also submit to you Robert Kennedy Jr., the author of this article in Rolling Stone, rollingstone.com, you can find it right now, that this is not new. The Republicans have been doing this for some time. I have a clip here of Paul Weyrich, you know, the Republican strategist who takes credit for Reagan's election. And he was speaking in a church to a group of Republican strategists, and this was about 15 years ago. Almost 15 years ago, Paul Weyrich, here's just a little 20-second clip. I think you'll find it very interesting.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And this is the game that the Republicans played masterfully in this election.
Well, and of course, Paul Weyrich is the genius who created the Christian right.
Yeah,
and
he's the founder of the Christian Coalition.
Right, and he is one of the people. He and Richard Viguerie invented direct mail.
Yeah,
and they're the ones who figured out how to organize all of these this kind of right wing malcontents and put them at the service of corporate power in America. And, of course, one of the ways that they do that, since the policies that they're advocating are not supported by the vast majority of the American people, they have to suppress the vote. Now, you know, this is not this should not be a partisan issue. This is an issue that should concern Democrats and Republicans, because this is the erosion of our democracy. And I think arguably it is the single most important issue that we face today in our country. Because if people believe that they've been deprived of their franchise, if they believe that their vote doesn't count, there's really our democracy ultimately is going to collapse.
Yeah, it's if it hasn't already. I mean, this what you suggest in your article is pretty compelling. I mean, would you come right out and say that you have the evidence, you have proof, or at least enough to satisfy, in your opinion, a jury, that the Republicans stole the election and that John Kerry should be president of the United States?
Well, here's what I would say. I would say that there's indisputable evidence that the Republicans tried to steal the election, that there's overwhelming evidence that they succeeded in stealing the election. I think that, yes, you could convince a jury, and I'm convinced that they succeeded in stealing the election. But it's almost a distraction at this point to dwell on that point, because the thing that I think that we have to focus the national press on is the open efforts of the Republicans to try to steal the election.
Yeah, there's another election coming.
Exactly. And that is the scandal. And I think what the Republicans will say is, the people who are defending this, and I was on Tucker Carlson last night, and I was gratified that, at the end of the interview, he said, this is a serious issue, and this is not a crackpot issue, and people should read this article. Because it's a good thing to see that kind of integrity within the Republican Party, that we all, share some kind of values, and that, the integrity of our democracy is important to all Americans, whether you're Republican or Democrat. But people who want to distract us from looking at this issue altogether will say, oh, well, there's no proof. You'll never be able to prove beyond any doubt that the election was, in fact, stolen. And that's probably true. It's true because the ballots are about to be destroyed under Ohio law. They can be destroyed within 3 years after the election, and that deadline is coming up. And so the proof is going to disappear. But the fact is that there is no dispute, no legitimate dispute, that the efforts were made to steal the election. And that, I think, is something that everybody has to focus on. That's a scandal, and people should be prosecuted for it. There should be hearings. People should go to jail.
We're talking with Robert F. Kennedy, Jr., his new piece in Rolling Stone magazine over at rollingstone.com about the theft of the election in 2004 and what it means for American democracy. Robert, can you stick around for another segment?
Sure.
And speaking of that, we have to take a commercial break here, but we'll be right back. And with more of Robert Kennedy, I'd like to go through the article. It's broken into pieces and some of the specifics, the components of how this theft happened and what we should be doing about it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 16 minutes past the hour, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least clean election.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now it's all designed to blow our minds, but our minds won't really be blown. Like the blow that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Ah, yes, the cover of the Rolling Stone, Robert Kennedy Jr. His new article, How They Stole... Well, no, it was the 2004 election stolen. In the subtitle, Republicans prevented more than 350,000 voters in Ohio from casting ballots or having their votes counted, enough to have put John Kerry in the White House. Robert Kennedy, I'd like to just play a short clip of Jack Cafferty on CNN yesterday, just summarizing some of the proposals that Republicans are putting forward with regard to voting, and get your take on this, if I may. Okay? Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, you're still with us?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me play you this clip, and just I'd like to get your response to this.
With midterm elections about 5 months away, the fundamental right of many Americans to vote might be in jeopardy. Florida has passed a new law that makes it financially impossible for the League of Women Voters to continue to register new voters. They decided they can no longer afford to carry out that mission. It's something they've been doing for 67 years. That's a shame. In Washington, a new law prevents people from voting if the state cannot match information on voter registration forms with government databases. Good luck, depending on the accuracy of government anything. And Congress is considering a voter ID requirement that they would tack onto the immigration reform bill. It would require all voters to present federally mandated photo ID. Even people who have voted for years would have to get one of these photo IDs in order to vote in 2008. People without driver's licenses, including many elderly and city residents who don't drive, might fail to do so and thus would be ineligible to vote.
So, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., this is just more of the same, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is those were a few of literally hundreds of similar proposals that are being advanced in state legislatures across the country. In Ohio, there's a whole raft of bills that that removes the barriers for corporate contributions and creates barriers for ex-felons to vote, creates essentially poll taxes for the that were abolished back in the 60s across the South because they were seen as racist, and they were seen as depriving minorities of their franchise. But those kind of bills are being advanced, these kind of subtle bills that try to exclude poor voters, Democratic voters, essentially, from the political process. And the voter ID is the holy grail of people who want to ensconce a permanent Republican majority in this country.
Because the white middle class and up will have no problem producing such an ID or hiring it done or whatever, whereas a lot of working people and certainly elderly and poor people or urban dwellers who don't drive.
Urban people and minorities, people who don't have driver's licenses, right. would be hard-pressed to, right now, even using the large amount of money that we had, that the Democratic Party had in 2004, we were able to register people, but you could register just by filling out a couple of lines on a form that you tore out of a newspaper.
Right.
And it's still, we have large numbers of Americans who aren't registered. If you had to force all of those people to go in and get a driver's license, or to get an ID from the government, which sometimes, I just got my lawyer's ID, and it took almost 4 months for me to get it. And it was a distracting and inconvenient process.
And very difficult if you have to work for a living and you have to take a day off to do it.
Exactly. And most, and people who work and people who are elderly, who overwhelmingly vote Democratic, are not going to be able to do that.
Now, two quick points. We only have about 2 minutes left. Robert, we're talking with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. His new piece in Rolling Stone magazine. You have to go to rollingstone.com or buy a copy, even better, of Rolling Stone magazine. Support the magazine and read this thing. In 2001, in November of 2001, the New York Times buried in paragraph 17 a sentence that said, an approach Mr. Gore and his lawyers rejected as impractical. A statewide recount would have produced enough votes to tilt the election his way, no matter what standard was chosen to judge voter intent. In other words, Gore won the 2000 election. Now,
right.
You're suggesting...
That's right, and they buried it. They deep-six that. Deep in the story, this was the product of a one-year investigation by a whole raft of newspaper syndicates that actually went out and counted all of the Florida. And the product of that investigation was released until a month after 9/11, and the editorial staff of the New York Times decided to bury it because they thought it was a time of national emergency. But it was a momentous story that should have been on the front page, that the wrong person was in the White House.
Yeah, and that was in 2000. Now, is this 2004 version of it that you've found going to get traction, do you think? We just have a few seconds left.
Well,
I'm sorry.
The same phenomenon has happened. We have the national press that has simply ignored this story. Most of the facts, although not all of them, but most of the facts in my article are facts that have been available to the press almost since Election Day. And yet, people who questioned the election were shouted down.
Amazing.
The two national reporters who really questioned this election were Republican Vanity Fair author Christopher Hitchens and Keith Olbermann from MSNBC. And
right.
Keith Olbermann received hate mail all
have
over
to,
the country.
It's 27 minutes past the hour.
is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I went out walking through streets paved with gold. Lifted some stones, saw the skin and bones of a city without a soul. I went out walking under an atomic sky, where the ground won't turn and the rain it burns like the tears when I said goodbye. Yeah, I went in with nothing, nothing but the thought of you. I went wandering.
It's gonna be Johnny Cash. 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This is the biggest story, I think, probably the biggest story in the history of the United States. I mean, think back. Was there ever a time in the United States where there was clear evidence that a president stole two elections in a row? That a person sat as president of the United States for 8 years without having been elected because he stole both elections. Has it ever happened? It has never happened before. This, in my opinion, is the biggest story in the history of the United States. You can find it. It's over at commondreams.org. You can find it over at rollingstone.com. Pick up a copy of the new issue of Rolling Stone out today or out this weekend. This is huge. And will it headline CBS News tonight? Will it headline NBC News tonight? Will it headline ABC News tonight? Will it be the topic of the Chris Matthews show today? Will it be the only topic that Joe Scarborough is talking about? Will it be the only thing that they're talking, that Wolf Blitzer's talking about? Is it going to be the core of talk radio? My guess is that those corporate forces are just fine with a little corporatocracy, with a little bit of fascist government, that they're not really all that interested in democracy. And if democracy has been essentially raped by George W. Bush and his buddies, that's fine with them because they're making out very well. Thank you very much. Jamie in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jamie, what's on your mind today?
You know, I just had been reading Mr. Kennedy's article.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it?
Well, and, you know, I got an email from a buddy of mine who is on the right side of things. And he's got something from the American Center for Voting Rights. I don't know if you've heard of this organization.
Yeah, it's one of the right-wing shell groups to say, you know, everything's fine except that there's too many black people voting.
Well, they apparently did their own study as well, which said that it was the Democrats who indeed were involved in all these types of issues more than the Republicans.
Right.
Well, they admitted the Republicans had.
Right.
And so, I mean, they're going to come off with this as well. But I guess I'm just curious, you know, how do we obviously stop this from happening again, and how do we make the media cover the story, and how do we make our senators and congresspeople get a little backbone and voice strong opinions about this story?
I think we just have to speak up to them. I mean, I went over to the Think Progress site today, and this was not the top story on the Think Progress blog, which boggled my mind. So I went to their Contact Us thing and sent them an email saying, why are you not covering Robert Kennedy's blockbuster? I mean, I haven't had time yet to go to the New York Times site and the Washington Post site and see if they're covering it. And if they're not, send emails to their reporters and their ombudsman. I haven't had time to call my local radio and television stations, but I intend to. And I think every single one of our listeners should be. I think we should also all be calling our members of Congress. Call your member of Congress toll free and say,
well,
hey,
I'm working. I work for my member of Congress, actually. I'm on the reelection campaign for Norm Dix.
Ah, well, there you go.
And I'm going to contact the congressman as quickly as I can and ask, you know, ask that he make a statement.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how we can. I mean, this is our most precious commodity or commons, if you will, as an American, is to be able to know that your vote counts. And I'm just so scared that my vote doesn't count.
I agree. And as Thomas Paine said, you know, the vote is that part of the commons by which all the other parts of the commons are secured. It's that part of democracy by which democracy is secured. And to remember your toll free number for Congress. Here's Janice Lieberer.
1-888-355-3588. Elk Flute. Democracy sure looks cute on you.
Call your representative toll free. 1-888-ELK-FLUTE.
Yes, the toll free number for Congress comes out to be Elk Flute. 1-888-ELK-FLUTE.
Well, I just beg you to keep talking about this and don't let them change the topic back don't let them change the topic anymore.
Yeah, well, there will be a variety of topics, but we're not going to let go of this one. Jamie, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Lee in Vancouver, B.C. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Yeah. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I was listening to Robert Kennedy, and I've read the article. I've read a number of articles. I live in Canada, as you already know. A lot of this information has been reported in not only the press here, but in press around the world over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
My question, though, really, is that all these things that Robert Kennedy talks about, and he's absolutely correct in what he says, but the fact of the matter is that those mechanisms are still in place. And as he was saying at the end of his interview, they're even trying to enhance their mechanisms to basically render the American elections irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, earlier in your show you were talking about when Bernie Sanders about taking back our government in 2006. And I was wondering how you think that's going to be accomplished, seeing as the forces that control the voting machines and all and registration and everything else in 2004 are still operating without challenge.
Well, we're down to the point here, Lee, where we only have two options left, and they're not mutually exclusive, they're concurrent options. Number one, we have to expose this as loudly, as clearly, as far and wide as we possibly can. And number two, we have to show up at the polls in such overwhelming numbers that and if they say, oh, I can't find your voter registration, just absolutely raise holy hell so that this and not accept nonsense like, oh, well, it must be that the Republicans won because they put gay marriage on the ballot. Not accept the BS that the press feeds us about why the exit polls and the election don't match. We just need to be standing up and speaking out. And that's just the bottom line. It's Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff.
Hi. I think it's one of the things we need to look at is it's time for some Aikido, the respect of using opponents' energy against mm-hmm. them. And what we have here is we've actually got a gift that we can't prove that there's election fraud, and that also means they can't prove that the elections are valid.
Right.
And we need to keep present this argument to county clerks and elections officials constantly, say, can you prove the election is valid?
Right.
And having sat in meetings with the Secretary of State's office here and everything, there has been a turnaround because they're feeling now that they have to prove it rather than that we have to disprove it.
Yeah, well said. Well said, Jeff, and that's the meme that we need to be putting forward. Thank you for
that. Yeah, always ask, can you prove it?
Yep, thank you. Good to hear from you. Jay in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Jay.
Hey, this all reminds me of a joke Robin Williams made about the British police where he said they don't have guns in Britain, so if you commit a crime, they say stop, or we'll say stop again.
Right.
And your answer to the guy from Canada sort of makes me think, no offense, but it's just empty rhetoric because we know they sold it in 2000, and...
Jay, two things. One, if you're on a speakerphone, please pick it up.
I'm not on a speakerphone, but I'll speak up.
And number two, what would you suggest as an alternative? I mean, those are the best things I can come up with. If you have got something better, I'm all ears.
Well, I guess that's the big question, and I guess we all need to really focus on how to deal with that. Kind of goes to my point yesterday where you said someone like Edwards and Kerry, you forgive them and they get to get reelected because they apologize. Well, if Dennis Kucinich was a senator in 2000, he would have stood up, and that scene in Michael Moore's movie probably would have been a lot different. Whereas Kerry and Edwards, you forgive them for not standing up. Maybe they need to stand up sometime.
Okay. Jay, thank you very much for the call. Alice in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Alice, what's up?
You now have proved Bush stole the election. Should they not be removed from office? How can they think we stole, so we get to keep it?
Yeah, I agree. I think that there should be a trial. As Robert Kennedy said, there should be investigations, there should be hearings, there should be trials, people should go to jail. And in my opinion, we should be saying, hey, maybe even a lot of the actions that this guy has taken over the last 8 years when he wasn't actually president are not legal.
Yeah.
Alice, thank you for the call.
Okay.
And thank you for listening. Mary in Port Orchard, Washington. Hey, Mary.
Hi. Are you talking to me?
I am.
Oh, wonderful. I just want to say I'm really grateful that you're addressing this issue. Right after the morning of the election, I emailed Kerry and said, Senator Kerry, and said, please, please, please don't concede. You've won. because it's heartbreaking. But another thing, I wanted to get back to what Bernie Sanders had talked about. I'm kind of dealing with a depressing situation with a future engineer. My son is a junior in high school, scores in the top 10% for math, science across the board, PSATs. He got accepted into a Johns Hopkins pre-college program for the summer where he plans, even though he wants to be an engineer, to study war and its causes. And he tells me, well, you have to understand war and its causes to prevent them. And I've been finding that there's no money to send him. Johns Hopkins had like 60 students that needed scholarships and only money for 25. And we do a lot of lip syncing, lip service to education, but there is no money for higher education, and I'm wrestling with how do I get this child to this program. It's extremely competitive. There's a huge wait list, and I can't find the money. And I look at it, and I think, why aren't we supporting higher education? Why do we keep saying we need engineers and we won't support a student? And you can't even get a student loan because he's only 17.
Because Bush's constituents want tax cuts. I mean, that's what it boils down to, Mary. It's really what it boils down to. I've got to run along, but you raise a really good issue, a very important one, and it's one that all of us need to be thinking about and trying to do something about. And frankly, the only way we're going to do that is if we take control of this political machine. And I think that the only way we're going to do that, as I said, is waking people up. After the break, an update from our White House basement correspondent, Victoria Jones.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And the darkness has descended on America with the 2004 election, and now it turns out it wasn't even what America wanted. The election was stolen. Victoria Jones is with us, the Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
I'm curious, Victoria, if the largest story, the biggest story in the history of the United States, that an actual president of the United States stole two elections in a row and never should have been president of the United States, now nailed down by Robert Kennedy irrefutably. You think back, no president of the United States has anybody ever seriously made that charge of. This the largest story in the history of this country if it's being covered by any of the media in Washington, D.C.?
Nope.
No. I have you had an opportunity to read his article in Rolling Stone? It just came out this morning.
I haven't had an opportunity to read it yet. I'm very intrigued.
You must. It's at rollingstone.com.
It's going to make me want to get a razor blade out, though, isn't it?
It's going to certainly change the way you view the folks that you interact with in Washington, D.C., particularly the Republicans. This is not a polemic. This is not any kind of a screed. This is simple, straightforward, factual, right down the middle reporting. And you finish reading this, and you go, oh, my God, what have they done?
Really?
I am not kidding you. When I said this is the largest story in the history of the United States, I am not exaggerating.
And you really do believe now that
yes.
It was stolen?
It's not a matter of belief. The evidence is irrefutable.
But nothing's going to happen.
Well, that's going to depend on whether or not the media picks this story up. I mean, November 12th, 2001. Let me see if I've got it around here someplace, right here. No, that's not it. Anyhow, November 12th, 2001, the New York Times ran an article, and I had it in my hand just a minute ago. I have no idea what I did with it now. Oh, here it is, right here. In which they said. And this is after they had actually counted all the votes in Florida. You'll recall the New York Times, the Washington
right.
Post, USA Today, they put this consortium together. And after they counted the votes, this was on 1 month and 1 day after 9/11. Quote, an approach Mr. Gore and his lawyers rejected as impractical, a statewide recount would have produced enough votes to tilt the election his way, that's to Al Gore, in the state of Florida, no matter what standard was chosen to judge voter intent. Dimpled Chads, pimpled Chads, pregnant Chads, hanging Chads, intent of the voter, no intent of the voter, no matter what, if they counted all the votes in Florida, Al Gore won. Now, that was in the New York Times, and when Hal Raines was asked later, why was that buried in the 17th paragraph? And the first three paragraphs pointed out that if Al Gore's strategy of only recounting the four major Democratic counties, you know, Broward and the ones around it, he actually still would have lost. Why was that in the beginning of the article? And the fact that a statewide recount, which is the way that we do elections in the United States, after all, was in the 17th paragraph. You know, why did you bury the lead? He said, we did that because 1 month earlier we had been attacked on 9/11 and we didn't want to undermine the legitimacy of George Bush during a time of national crisis.
Oh, my God.
And that's a matter of public record. I mean, you can find this on the New York Times website, November 12, 2001, and the headline, the title of the article is Examining the Vote, the Overview, Study of Disputed Florida Ballots Finds Justices Did Not Cast the Deciding Vote. Now, that would cause you to think that George Bush actually won Florida, right?
Yeah.
And the first dozen paragraphs are all about how Al Gore initially asked for these four counties to be recounted, and we counted all of those ballots, and if those four counties were recounted, Al Gore still would have lost. He would have lost by fewer votes, but he still would have lost. And then in the 17th paragraph, they point out that, oh, by the way, if you count the entire state, Gore won. No matter what, he won by such a large margin. If you count the entire state, it doesn't matter what the criteria you use is, he won. And the story could have been written either way, and they chose to write it the way that they did because they didn't want to undermine Bush's credibility in time of national crisis. The Washington Post did the similar thing, but it was published in both papers. This is a matter of public record. And now in 2004, Robert Kennedy Jr. comes out in this piece in Rolling Stone with the headline, "Was the 2004 election stolen?" And he just lays it out irrefutably. I'm telling you, irrefutably, the election was stolen. You got to help us get this word out, Victoria Jones.
I will talk about it.
Thank you. So what's happening in Washington, D.C. other than that?
Well, other than that, Iraq, Iran, and terrorism funding, they're the big issues. Terrorism funding is a big issue in Washington because, gosh, Washington didn't get any money. Well, you know, didn't get as much money as it wanted, so it's a big issue to Washington.
Well, in New York City, too.
New York City, right, exactly.
40% cut.
Absolutely, but, I mean, it's a big issue in Washington because most of the press corps live in Washington. That's really why. But it is quite extraordinary, and people are still trying to figure out what Michael Chertoff was up to, and nobody can. But Iraq and Iran are really the big issues. I mean, I was at the morning briefing and the lunchtime briefing, and almost nothing except the federal marriage amendment, which will probably send you into orbit, came up.
Yeah, this exactly. Bill Frist, this is the most important thing facing America, whether or not gays can marry.
Well, I asked an interesting question. I said, look, Tony, we've got Iraq, we've got investigations of massacres there, we've got Iran, we've got hurricane season starting, I listed three or four things. I said, but he's giving a radio address on gay marriage. Is that
right?
The most important thing? And he said the other issues were important too, but that this was important.
Yeah. Well, it is for Republican electoral victories. I mean, that's about it.
That's true.
Yeah. Victoria Jones, our senior White House basement correspondent with TalkRadioNews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Next, we'll be speaking with Mark Stark, the founder of Calling All Wingnuts, the guy who's quite literally making Rush Limbaugh crazy. You're not going to want to miss this. Stick around. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friend. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, Truth in Broadcasting. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. And Mike Stark is with us. He's the founder of Calling All Wingnuts, www.callingallwingnuts.com. And you recall a couple days ago, poor OxyContin Rush just went absolutely nuts. He had a caller by the name of Jack, and he was...
Just tell us who you are, Jack, and tell us where you really live.
Well, you know, I think you've lost your marbles.
No, Jack, I'm in full possession of all three.
I have no idea what you're talking
about.
And off they went, you know. And Jack was actually Jack, but Rush apparently thought he was you, Mike.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I got to tell you, I love the blogosphere. I wasn't listening to the show that day, but about 10 people left comments at my blog saying you got to get a hold of Rush's show from that day.
Yeah.
And every job has its indignities. I actually subscribed to the site, so I was able to go back into the archives and pull it up. I had just gotten back from Charlottesville, where I went down to find a place to live, which is a pretty harrowing and stressful experience. That provided a welcome laugh.
Yeah, we should add, you are on hold with another right-wing show right now, and if you get through, we may hear you do your shtick.
Yeah, you'll hear my end. You won't hear the other guy's end, unfortunately. But essentially what I'm going to talk about today, if I get the chance, is how the right wing has absolutely torn Harry Reid to pieces for accepting a couple of boxing tickets when they were absolutely silent or even defended Tom DeLay for going on a $70,000 trip to St. Andrews Golf Course in Scotland at the on the dime of Jack Abramoff.
Right. Okay. So maybe Mr. Sean will let you on there, and we'll see what happens. Now you've turned this into an art form, getting on right wing talk shows, and dropping essentially the truth. I mean, it's not we have, you know, on this show from time to time people who call up who just want to scream obscenities and stuff like that, and you know you figure out pretty soon that you've got somebody who's drunk or somebody who's crazy, and you don't put them on the air. But I actually try to get conservatives to call my program and argue with me because have discussions with me because, you know, I'm willing to take on these topics. I mean, I like that. But the conservatives don't.
Well, I think that's the difference between us and them. They're about winning elections at any cost. We're about developing good policy and standing for what's right and what's going to provide the country with the best future. And I think the only way to do that is through serious debate. Right wing talk radio is not serious debate. I understand that going into it. I'm walking into a minefield. Every single lever there is on their side against my side. I mean, it's not anywhere near a level playing field. They can mute my microphone. They can hang up on me whenever they want. They can even, beep what I have to say out of the conversation, which has happened before.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about David Dreyer and, you know, his sexual orientation, and Sean Hannity didn't want that going out over his airwaves, so he just censored it. It's not right, but you're right. I think the key to getting on any talk radio, left or right, is not to call with any kind of trick. Don't try to pretend to be some kind of hillbilly from South Carolina saying stupid stuff. Call and try to debate them. They'll put you on, and you'll get about 30 or 45 or maybe even 90 seconds to say what you have to say, and then the playing field tilts in their favor, and they pretty much.
But at least you get the meme out there.
Exactly.
Mike Stark, I'm curious, have you read Robert F. Kennedy's piece in Rolling Stone magazine about the theft of the 2004 election?
So far, I've read the first three pages of it. That's something you absolutely have to do if you're going to call talk radio is stay informed. And it is absolutely disturbing. I've actually been emailing back and forth how it's too bad so many people sniff at those of us concerned about our franchise after all these people died for it, fighting the civil rights and women's suffrage movements.
And the Revolutionary War, for that matter. I mean, I believe that this is the biggest story in the history of the United States, because I don't think that we've ever had a president whose legitimacy was in doubt, who seriously in doubt. And this isn't just in doubt. I mean, this is genuinely challenged. The 2004 election, the New York Times found after 9/11, they published the story that Al Gore would have won Florida in a statewide recount by any criteria. And or in the 2000 election, rather. And in the 2004 election here now, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has found that George W. Bush, well, the Republicans, stole at the very least Ohio and a chunk of New Mexico, and in all probability a whole bunch of other states as well, that John Kerry clearly won the 2004 election. And this is just huge. I'm hopeful, Mike Stark, that you and your legion of right-wing talk show host callers will begin putting this front and center.
I would like to as well, but it's a very difficult one to do on right-wing radio. Unfortunately, the easiest thing for them to do and most effective thing for them to do is, you know, just sniff at us as a bunch of conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
And that short-circuits the conversation. It's the beginning and the end of the conversation. I think it's a better subject for responsible media than right-wing talk radio. It just plays into their hands way too well. They call us a bunch of raving lunatics on a daily basis if we call in saying something like as substantial as an American election was stolen. It just plays into their hands.
Well, it might cause a few people to go over to RollingStone.com and read the article, though. I mean, if you could even just get it out, you know, the cover story on Rolling Stone this week is about what happened in Ohio in the 2004 election. You know, I mean, something like that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The more people hear about that. But we need to get it out of Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone still has, you know, this reputation as a magazine for teenagers. We need Time Magazine, Newsweek Magazine,
yep.
And, you know.
And that's why, instead of just calling right-wing talk radio, everybody should be calling Time Magazine and Newsweek and the New York Times and the Washington Post. And I've just sent an email to the folks over at Think Progress. I mean, you know, David, my producer here, David Poole, just went through and searched all the major newspapers, the New York Post, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the L.A. Times, right through the list. None of them have, at this moment, a single word up about Robert Kennedy's story. Not one.
Because they're the ones that have fallen down on this job. We count on the media to be the fourth estate, to be the fourth branch of government providing balance and oversight to the other three, and they've absolutely ignored this story. They screwed up big time.
Because they're not in the news business anymore. They're now in the business of delivering advertising. They're delivering eyeballs and ears and readership so that they can make money.
Entertainment.
Yeah.
Entertainment and money. That's absolutely true. Right?
Infotainment. So, Mike Stark, callingallwingnuts.com, the website for people who want to learn how to call right-wing talk radio and at least get a few talking points out or do it for, you know, for recreation and fun. Mike, you know, we have to wrap this up in about a minute and a half here. I'm just curious, what's the best advice that you would give to our listeners about getting on right-wing, for that matter, left-wing talk radio, getting on and being a guest on talk radio?
Be informed. Anticipate what they're going to say by listening to the shows a couple of times before you call in. You find out the different tricks they're going to use. And then patience and persistence. Keep it and redial until the busy signal goes away. They usually have a bank of phones, and they have them all off the hook until they open up their lines. Then if you're lucky enough, you'll be... Sure. If you're lucky enough, you'll be one of the 8 or 9 callers that they take. And then you have to sit on hold and be patient until they actually take it. And then, like I said, you got to be prepared. I mean, get out there and read the blogs. Find out the information that the mainstream media isn't telling you because they're too busy concerned about missing white women somewhere. Get the information and have the facts at your fingertips so you can refute anything any of these guys say. Those are the important things.
Yeah, well said. Well, Mike, I wish you the best and, you know, hope you get through to Hannity there. Good luck.
I just was told to hang on for a second. Hey, Tom, thanks for having me on. And I got to tell you, you got a lot of active listeners because my site exploded with emails and traffic after you talked about me yesterday.
Oh, great. Good. That's good to know.
That's great. Thank you.
That's good to know. Mike Stark, callingallwingnuts.com. Thanks, Mike, for being with us. Much appreciated and appreciate the efforts that you're doing. It's good work. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, and we just have 30 seconds before we have to take a break, so I'll take your calls right after the break. We'll get right back to that. But I just want to let you know, this 2001, as I said, every time I talk about this on the air, I get at least a dozen emails from people saying, can you send me a copy of that? Is that really true? Yeah, here, you can easily find it. Go to the New York Times website and do a search on November 12, 2001. November 12, 2001. And probably if you just put in Fessenden, F-E-S-S-E-N-D-E-N, and Broder, the authors, Ford Fessenden and John Broder, you'll get it. Or if you put in Examining the Vote, in quotes, which is the title of the article. And then you just skimmed out of the 17th paragraph, and there it is. An approach Mr. Gore and his lawyers rejected as impractical. A statewide recount could have produced enough votes to tilt the election his way, no matter what standard was chosen to judge voter intent. 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
If you're gone, baby, you need to come home. Come home. There's a little bit of something in every day.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our number 866-440-8466. If you want to drop into our live chat room, you can just go to tomhartman.com and drop in and say hi. Click live chat right up at the top of the page. Jeff in Sacramento, California, KSAC. Jeff, you disagree with me, according to Dan, so you go to the front of the line. What's up?
Yes. Hi, Tom. Yes. I used to be quite concerned about the voter fraud issue, whether it be from Republicans or from Democrats. At this point, though, I am not, and I actually am gleeful if there is some fraud by the Republicans, because, you know, I'm just, the issue is very tiring when you try to work so hard to expose the, in California, there is a lot of voter fraud by the Democrats. I don't know about the rest of the United States, but in California, they want very badly for the illegals to vote. And they are setting up California so that these people can vote illegally if they can't get them to vote legally.
Okay, so you're talking largely about people from Mexico, right?
Mexico, whatever.
Yeah. Well, so you're talking about people who by and large are Catholic. They're opposed to gay marriage. They're opposed to abortion.
They will vote Democrat because of the benefits, the $10 billion in benefits that California legislators have given them. But the issue that...
You don't think that the Republicans can get them with the social issues? Because what I'm hearing is that an awful lot of the Hispanic vote is very conservative on these social issues, and that's why the Republicans are doing what they're doing. And also George Bush is the guy who's out in front of trying to, you know, say we should have amnesty and all this stuff.
Okay, but if you listen to a lot of the illegals here, they're saying, some of them are believing that California still belongs to Mexico, and they're saying we're going to get back Mexico or California to Mexico by gun or by vote. Yeah. And so that's a concern. But the biggest concern is that the Democrats have been wooing the illegals by telling them that they're the ones that will make sure that the illegals get all these benefits.
Yeah. Jeff, I have to say, frankly, I don't buy it. I'm sorry. Well, I can't imagine that if you're standing, I mean, particularly given how the Republican poll challengers work, where they stand in line and, you know, challenge people, that if somebody is in this country illegally, that they're going to walk right into the middle of the government machine to cast one vote. They're going to risk their being here in this country. They're going to risk going to jail. They're going to risk being deported to cast one vote. I just don't buy it. I don't believe it.
Well, the California legislature has forbidden the poll workers in California for asking for any identification whatsoever. Even if they suspect that the person is not who they are, they cannot, they're forbidden to ask. And so anybody could walk in and say they're me and cast a vote in my name.
Right, but I still don't think, you know, if illegals are voting, it has to be a very, very, very tiny number, Jeff. Nothing compared to, for example, what the Republicans did in Ohio, where they threw over 350,000 people off the voting rolls and prevented them from voting in largely Democratic areas, in areas that vote more than 70% Democratic, and then Bush wins by 50,000 votes.
But,
I mean, and we're talking about the presidency of the United States. I'm sorry, Jeff. It doesn't seem to me like, you know, I get your point. I get it that you're afraid that illegals are going to show up in the voting booth.
No, I'm not afraid. what I'm seeing is that, okay, in this new license for illegal immigrant bill that the Democrats kept pushing over and over and over again,
right.
Okay, if they succeed, when they get their license, in their license is an application to apply for to vote,
yeah.
Okay? And they could, the illegal could fill it out, send it in, and it will come to them.
If that's the case, I think that's wrong.
No, but the Democrats refuse to take it out, and
yeah.
they keep pushing that bill with that registration form in the driver's license.
Yeah. Now, I think that, you know, I would agree with you that that is wrong, and I'm frankly opposed to somebody who's in this country illegally getting driver's licenses.
But Gil Castillo has
But I don't think that those people are going to be showing up at the polls. I mean, you know, I think that the illegal immigration problem is a big problem in a whole lot of areas, but I think it goes way beyond just the polls. And I think we've talked this to the end of it. Sandra in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Sandra, we have about a minute before we've got to take a break. What's up?
Well, I called in response to the worker for Norm Dix up here. I'm calling from Washington State, and he said that he's already heard the early defensive spin on this news about the election.
Oh, really?
Well, he said that he's heard that pretty much what you've just heard, that they're going to, what I've heard myself is that it's our own damn fault.
Yeah.
After all, this is the president who gave us fool me once, shame on you, or tried
right.
to give it to us, fool
right.
me twice.
Right, he couldn't say it out loud. So you're suggesting that the Republicans are going to be coming out by saying, number one, the Democrats are engaging in vote fraud.
Oh, yeah.
And number two, that the major way that they're doing it is by trying to entice illegal aliens to vote.
Well, I'll tell you, from one state that did overturn an election result from Republican to Democrat, it's this one. We finally got our Democrat governor.
That's right. Democratic government.
Oh, well,
yes.
Okay, I thought that was an adjective. But it's true that what happened was that now the Republicans are saying that to not have this happen again, we need to go to automated tabulating because human beings are flawed. And the Democrats are saying that all machines that don't give you a paper trail should be sealed and impounded.
Yeah,
because
well,
they can't comply with the law.
They're right, Sandra. Sandra, thanks for the call. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Somehow somebody must have kicked you around some. Tell me why you would lay there reveling in your abandon.
And welcome back. 25 minutes before the hour. We'll be in about 15 seconds. Welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. I just for a second here, I got an email from a listener in Tracy, California, Don, and he's really concerned because yesterday I made the comment that I've been in the Middle East. I was talking about Jesus' parable about, you know, if somebody slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them your other cheek. And I said the left hand is unclean in the Middle East, and this was before toilet paper. And I've said I've been there, and even now there are parts of the Middle East where they don't use toilet paper. Obviously, there's large chunks of the Middle East where they do. It's like any of the big cities. But and Don says, and I talked about the toilets that I've used and that are literally a hole in the floor with a footprint on either side. I have seen these in India. I've seen them in China. I've seen them all across the Middle East. I've seen them across Africa. This is just like when you work in the rural areas, and I've spent 28 years doing international relief work in poor parts of the Middle East, of Asia, of Africa, of South America. Actually, I've never seen these kind of toilets in South America, but all across that part of the world. And yeah, you will find them. I have seen them in Egypt. He says, well, my daughter studied Arabic for a year in Jordan, and I visited her. Well, my guess is if you visited her in Amman, you were staying in a nice hotel, you were going to a nice place. Yeah, of course there's toilet paper all over the place. But go out to the poorer areas, and you will find that the traditional toilets are in use, you know, where you've got a can of water sitting next to it or dripping water next to it that you wipe your hand off on. He says, you need to apologize to your listeners for this very insulting image of Arabs. It's not Arabs. This is just how it is. I would guess that probably out of the 6 billion people on planet Earth, at least 4 billion of them don't use toilet paper. And, you know, sorry if that offends you, but that's, I've been there, I've seen it, and it's not, and as I said, it's not just the Middle East. So, Don, that's the way it is. Jake in Arcata, California. Hey, Jake, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Good.
You know, I believe the primary reason at this point why the so-called mainstream media is refusing to pick up the Republican election fraud issue is because our so-called leadership in the Democratic Party is refusing to make an issue out of it publicly. I mean, and the fact is, if you look at the two twin issues that the Democratic Party leadership is being silent about, election fraud and Bush-Cheney impeachment, those two issues should be tied together and used in this campaign, because if we wait until after November, Tom, it's going to be too late for either one of those. Because if they steal the election again and we don't question it before then, you know, it's going to be over, and the Democrats are just going to lay down like they did in 2000 and 2004. We can't let this happen.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree with you, Jake. And my hope is that this article by Bobby Kennedy is going to be the cold water, the bucket of cold water in the face to the Democratic Party that, frankly, I thought the election of 2006 or 2004 was going to be, but apparently wasn't. And frankly, I have to say, I think the biggest problem here is not the Democratic Party or the Democrats. It's the media. It is absolutely the media. When Mark Crispin Miller met with John Kerry and handed him a copy of his book, Fooled Again, and he said to John Kerry, he said, you know, Senator, the election was stolen from you, and the proof of it's in my book here. And John Kerry says, yeah, I know it was stolen. And then Miller goes out and reports that, talks about that, and Kerry comes out, has to come out and say, well, you know, I did say that. And the reason why is because he knows that the media is going to take him apart for being a tinfoil hat guy. Now you've got somebody who has absolutely solid credentials, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The guy, you know, he's not some even he's not to say that Mark Crispin Miller is any kind of a fringe guy, but Robert Kennedy Jr. is at least connected into the establishment, you know, through his family, through his uncle, through his father, and he's saying this, and he's backing it up in a way that is absolutely irrefutable. And if the Democrats don't take this thing and run with it, and not just run with it, scream about it.
We have to be
forcing them to do it. I mean, you know, call 1-888-ELK-FLUTE and talk to your member of Congress and say, you know, please do something about this and do something about it now. Read Robert Kennedy's article. Jake,
absolutely.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call. I got to move along. Bob in Burlington. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. That toilet was a hard one to follow up on, but
I'm sorry. It's just, you know, I guess being called a bigot, you know, it's that causes me to want to respond.
Well, people call me
a communist all the time. I don't feel any need to respond to them, even though I'm not. But
well, in the late 70s, I remember the footprints painted on the floor in Germany. So it's not like
as a matter of fact,
quite frankly, and now the toilets don't have toilet paper, but it's advanced.
Yeah.
Anyway, two things. The FBI raid on Congress, I think we should start just blatantly referring to as Watergate 3. I suppose we don't know what Watergate 2 was yet.
Well, here's the problem, though. More than 80% of Americans believe that the FBI should have the right to go into the members and into the offices of members of Congress. And that
just proves that 80% of America is stupid as to the basic constitutional framework that's built upon.
This is the absolute failure of the teaching of civics in our schools. We no longer teach civics in our schools. It's just that simple.
Well, we don't teach anything in the schools. But my point more for today, I was calling in for Bernie, but there's something going on in the FAA now that needs to be brought up to the level of awareness. In that,
are you talking about fairfaa.org?
FAA, I'm talking about the whole business of imposing a contract on the bubble of controllers that came in after Reagan misused the word protest and turned it into resignation. And all of those guys, if there's a new contract imposed, the bulk of our experienced air traffic controllers that were hired after Reagan fired all of them are going to be forced to retire, because the contract that the FAA is going to impose is going to so restructure the retirement benefits that if they stay, they'll be taking both a pay cut and a retirement cut.
Right. And in fact, you can go to fairfaa.org, F-A-I-R-F-A-A.org, or fairfaa.com, either one.
And if there's one there's one thing we probably agree on, it's that we need some experienced people keeping the planes apart in the sky.
Yeah, what they want to do, what the Bushies want to do is they want to stop, you know, right now the entry-level jobs at the FAA for an air traffic controller, which is not really an entry-level job. You can't make a transition from Burger King to being an air traffic controller. You've got to go through some serious training and experience. But those entry-level jobs pay around $35,000, $36,000, $37,000 a year. They want to start these folks out at $17,000 a year. And that is gonna just destroy the FAA, and none of us will be safe in an airplane again.
And oddly enough, Tom, that $17,000 is what they started people at back in the early '80s when Reagan. I mean, we're basically looking at going back 25 years worth of salary.
Yeah, except for the fact that in the early '80s, $17,000 had the purchasing power of about $30,000 right now.
Yeah, it meant something.
Yeah. So anyway, right. Bob, thanks for the heads up. It's a tough week.
Haven't heard from Louise yet either, just on a side.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure what that means, but you probably know her email address. So you can get to her. Or drop in the chat room, actually. Louise is there every day. Joe in Paris, France. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Because I'm glad to hear about the Robert Kennedy article. I've been following on the net for some time, the various articles that have appeared about the 2004 election. But there's a take on it that's a little bit different. There's all of the talk revolves around the battleground states. And I think one important aspect that I have never seen discussed, and maybe it just hasn't come my way, maybe you have heard about it, is there any sort of investigation into what's happened in the red states, in the reddest of the red states? And I tell you, the reason why it occurred to me is that I remember in the days leading up to the election, just out of idle curiosity, I would check the polls to see, what was sort of swinging which way, but also just to see, which of the really red states like Utah and Idaho and Texas and Kansas and places like this were redder than the others, just for curiosity's sake. And the one thing that I noticed is when the election finally had happened, that the results in each of those states was about 4 or 5% higher than expected.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would that make a difference in terms of the electoral vote? It wouldn't make any difference in terms of the electoral vote, but the one thing I think that must have been part of the calculation on the part of the Republican
popular majority.
Team. Hello?
Was having a popular majority.
That's right. And the necessity to have that in order to take the wind out of the sails of any sort of redux for a recount at any point.
Yeah.
And it must have been, to beef up the popular vote in the states where nobody would be looking.
Yeah.
Was one of the things that occurred to me, and nothing has been said about this. Have you heard anything?
Robert Kennedy addresses that in his article.
Florida and all this, but it seems to me that there was probably as much corruption going on, and perhaps even more in places like this.
Yeah, Robert Kennedy actually addresses that in his article, and in fact, he points out that in some of the most red counties, now that's different than the states, but most of his article focuses on Ohio. In many of the most red counties, that's where the largest amount of ballot stuffing happened. And so, if it's happening in the most red counties in Ohio, I think it's fairly safe to assume that it's happening in the red states.
And you think it's fair reason? To say that that Kerry also won the popular vote?
Oh yeah,
was never.
Oh yeah, and that's the conclusion Robert Kennedy comes to in his article.
I haven't gotten to the end of the article.
Yeah, you got it. You have to read with him. That Kerry won the popular vote in the United States by millions of votes, and he won the electoral vote at the very least in Ohio. That can be easily documented, and in a number of other states as well.
Did you also notice recently, I think it was just a couple of nights ago, on Amy Goodman, there was a report of a county commissioner in Utah who had posed some questions about the Diebold machines and was fired. I don't know whether you heard about this, but this is another...
I didn't hear about that particular one, Joe, but that has happened a lot all around the country, particularly to the Secretary of State in California, Kevin Shelley. 45 minutes past the hour. Joe, thanks for the call. 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's good to be king, have your own way, get a feeling of peace at the end of the day. When you book our barn, your canary seat. You're out there with me. It's good to be king.
And just ask George. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Thanks so much to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Alex Goldmark and Dan Jacobs at Air America Radio, as well as Tim, who's filling in today, running the board. Tim, I don't know your last name. Tim MacArthur. Thank you, Tim. Sorry about that. Ben and Shelby over at White Rose Society and RadioPower.org. Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room. Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our websites, to our affiliates, and to our newest affiliate, KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. Special greetings. And to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company, and to you for listening to our program. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466, and David in Blaine, Washington on the line. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, it seems like members of Congress, with a few exceptions, care more about keeping their jobs, you know, to the detriment of our election systems, which is riddled with cracks, than passing emergency legislation that would truly reform the way we conduct elections every 2 years, for example, by banning all the computerized voting machines. And like you said earlier, doing it all by paper ballots, like they do in Europe, crying out loud.
And they do in Canada, and they do in Mexico, and they do it in pretty much every other country in the world.
So it took us 2 years to compile all the evidence, which was glaring and obvious, that there was not just vote fraud, and this isn't about sour grapes either, but until the Democrats get into the majority, then we'd have all these investigations that have been piling up since Rehnquist selected Bush in 2000,
right,
which is unbelievable.
I'm with you. The points you're making, David, that just that. See, Congress has to get serious about that.
So, and it shouldn't even be about who's a Republican or who's a Democrat. This is an American issue.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and well said, and thank you for the call. Steve in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom, this is going to be a quick one. I just want to know that you touched on it just for a second. If you can articulate to the audience why it's not okay to search a congressman's office.
My understanding of this, Steve, and I'm not an authority on this, and frankly, there hasn't been a good discussion of this in the press, but my understanding of this is that, first of all, the big picture, Washington, D.C. was set aside from the rest of the United States. It was the District of Columbia, the goddess of this country, as a place that would be separate from politics. That's why the representatives, the people in D.C. don't have a vote. They don't have a representative in Congress. They have a person who can sit and watch. They don't have senators. And so there was that kind of set aside. And then separately, there is the concept of the balance of powers, the separation of powers. The police and enforcement powers for the executive branch include the FBI and the CIA and the Department of Defense and all that. And Congress has its own internal police force. I believe that they're called the Congressional Police. I'm not absolutely certain. And so the way that it should work, and the way it has historically worked, if you have a member of Congress who's going to be investigated, is that the executive branch would ask the legislative branch, would ask the police force of the legislative branch to check out the legislative branch. Just like the Congress doesn't have the authority to walk into the office of George W. Bush and say, we're going to go through your drawers.
Right.
And this is just about the separation of powers.
Is there also something to the effect that a congressman could have very sensitive information in his office to his district?
Well, he may. I mean, do you mean are his offices in his district also sacrosanct?
No. I mean his office in Washington.
Yeah, it could be, but I think that the issue here is the constitutional one. It's not even the practical one. It's I think all of us agree that if somebody's breaking the law, there should be a way to catch them.
Gotcha.
But the separation of powers doctrine, which is specified in the Constitution, basically says that these two branches of government have the right to cooperate, but they don't have the right to mess with each other.
It's another example of Bush acting like a king.
Yeah, it really is. And most Americans don't get that because it's a fairly subtle point. And I'm probably not even doing a good service to it. We should probably get a constitutional scholar on here to just, find out all the details of exactly where it's buried and how it's written and all that kind of thing and what the precedents are. But that's my understanding.
Yeah, let's do that next week.
Okay, you got it.
Take care, Tom.
Thanks a lot. Dick in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Dick.
Yeah, Tom, you know, it's long past time that we realize, you know, our corporate media played an active part in this Republican institutional theft of our national elections. You know, they deliberately covered the theft up of our democracy by denying it, essentially.
I'm absolutely right there with you, Dick. I totally agree. Carrie in Anchorage, Alaska. Hey, Carrie.
Hey,
I'm moving along
faster.
We just have a minute or so left.
Up here in Alaska, they've had some serious voter problems. This is considered a red state now, but what's been going on is there've been some what is considered to be voter fraud. The Democratic Party has tried to get after it.
Oh, and you guys were running these great spots. Rich there, KUDO, put together some great spoof spots for Diebold.
Yeah, he's amazing. But you know, up here in some of the precincts, they've had up to 232% voter turnout.
Wow.
So I'm not kidding you. And not only that, but the Republicans who control the House and the Senate and the governor's office refuse to release the actual numbers that Diebold produces, even though the fact that Diebold has told them, it's proprietary, we can't let the Democrats have it. Then Diebold said, well, it's not proprietary, you can have it. And now they're saying, well, we can't let the Democrats have it because our passwords would be compromised, like they can't change the passwords. It's absolutely amazing, and it's an ongoing struggle, and the Democrats are suing now to try and get their hands on the information. But you want to talk about a red state that counted the votes wrong, look at Alaska.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Over 200% voter turnout, and it hasn't been explained.
In CN, some precincts, over 200% voter turnout at the polls. Of like, you know, 100 voters, they registered 238 votes. It's amazing.
Amazing. Carrie in Anchorage, Alaska, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us there on KUDO. Much appreciated there in Anchorage. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program on Monday, we'll be talking to Andrew Bernstein. He's going to say price gouging, not a crime. Greg Palast is going to be here in the studio with his new book, Armed Madhouse. That and more and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. Shabbat shalom, TGIF, whatever it may be for you. Have a great and safe weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.